Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. Explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. Coming to you live from Eastern Kentucky, and our AccuWindow forecast is very, very cold tonight. Down around, just below freezing. And I gotta tell you, it's pretty cold all over the country, all over the world, in fact. The solar wind is holding at 340.6 kilometers per second. Sunspot 1040 has come around the limb of the sun and is now at least four times wider than planet Earth. Shows promise for flares. It's clearly part of solar cycle 24. Last week when NASA's Terra satellite orbited over Europe, it saw something very unusual. The normally temperate British Isles were completely covered by snow. On January 7th, from an altitude of 420 miles, looks a little like the glaciers of old as the global storm dumped record snows. By the way, these snows will reflect the sun's energy out into space and sharply cool the Earth. Snow was piled so high in Iowa, the drivers couldn't see across the intersections, and a North Dakota snowblower repair shop was overwhelmed with business as residents braced Thursday for heavy snow and wind chills as low as 50 below zero. Frigid weather was also gripping the South. That's where we are, where a rare cold snap was expected to bring snow and ice Thursday to states from South Carolina to Louisiana. Forecasters said wind chills could drop to near zero at night in some areas. We were minus two here last night, and it snowed for 4 days straight. Now, it wasn't a lot of snow. Some of it was kind of table salt snow, but still, that's not normal for us. A would-be terrorist tries to board a plane, bent on mass murder. As he walks through a security checkpoint, fidgeting and glancing around, a network of high-tech machines analyzes his body language and reads his mind. Screeners pull him aside. Tragedy is averted. As far-fetched as that sounds, systems that aim to get inside an evildoer's head are among the proposals floated by security experts thinking beyond the X-ray machines and metal detectors used on millions of passengers and bags each year. The system that Israel-based We See You Technologies has devised and is testing in Israel gets loaded up. So I think we're back on the air really quick. No problem. Just a quick. Yeah, okay. 60 seconds and we're back on. I like it. All right. Where was I? Oh, yes. We See You Technologies has devised and is testing in Israel. It projects images onto airport screens, such as symbols associated with a certain terrorist group or some other image only a would-be terrorist would recognize, said the company CEO Ehud Givon. The logic is that people can't help reacting even if it's only subtly, to familiar images that suddenly appear in unfamiliar places. If you strolled through an airport and saw a picture of your mother, Givon explained, you couldn't help but respond. The We See You system would use humans to do some of the observing, but would rely mostly on hidden cameras or sensors that can detect a slight rise in biology. Temperature and heart rate. Far more sensitive devices under development that can make such measurements from a distance would be incorporated later. Sounds a little bit like Minority Report. You remember that random scanner that went around and caught people's corneas and would tell who you were right away. Anyway, a quote, all must look to Israel and learn from them. This is not a post-9/11 thing for them. They've been doing this since 1966, says Michael Goldberg, president of New York-based IDO Security, Inc., which developed a device that can scan shoes while they are still on people's feet. Very interesting stuff. All right, we're about to begin the first hour of X-Squared Radio. Don't go away. 40 seconds. We'll be right back. I thank you so much for the mail the last couple of weeks. Many people have been writing in, actually saying that the reprieve from having guests on the program has been good. Of course, I like to have the guests on the program because their subject material is very interesting. We're now reading the book Contactees by Nick Redfern, and he's going to be on the program in a couple of weeks. We're also going to have Mr. Summers on the program to talk about his book, Great Waves of Change. Both of them are being arranged as we speak. Tonight, I want to leave the phone lines open all night, by the way. It is 415-762-1161. That's 415-762-1161. Go ahead and put that on speed dial because you may want to call in tonight. We have a rather interesting subject. We touched on this briefly a couple of weeks ago because of the significance of the date being December 21st, 2009, that we were exactly 3 years away from the advent of 2012. Now, I'm sure you're going to see this year, you're going to see a lot of programs coming on Discovery Channel and History Channel talking about 2012. And be not deceived, okay? We wrote our three books back in 2001. We finished the first one in 2004. It came out. Second one, 2005. And the third one in 2006. And they've done really, really well. I have to tell you that a lot of the things that we outlined in those books has already come to pass. Some of the things are still pending from those books. But what we have found is a lot of prognosticators, a lot of, let's just call them Johnny-come-latelys, people who are picking up on the wave and then trying to make profit off of 2012, just like they do global warming, just like they do every other pending disaster. I'm asking you to be not deceived. You know, of course, several of them have interviewed us, and I keep telling them that I have a face for radio, and then they believe me, and we don't get on the program. But it's not quite as sensational as what they're trying to make it out to be. However, we're going to consider the question tonight because, like any piece of information that goes out there, that has an effect on so many different levels of the human psyche, of the sociology, of even the anthropology of mankind. It has its effect. It's a little like you know, telling people that that they only have 2 years to live, and how are they going to change their lives? And so tonight, what I would like to do is to consider some of the more sociological events, and we'll talk about it from a scientific point. But I really want to hear your viewpoint on this. You remember last week we talked about the supernova that could hit the Earth in 2029. Well, NASA is building a new space telescope named New Star to answer a question that has been vexing astrophysicists for decades. Why won't the supernova explode? Now, this is a really important question, because many people thought, oh, gee, the white dwarf and the sun that is having its gas stripped away by that white dwarf apparently are 3,000 light years away. And everybody kind of breathed a big sigh of relief when the news article came. Oh, gee, wonderful. 3,000 light years away. That's fine. At least my retirement and my grandkids' retirement will be finished by the time that thing explodes. Keep in mind that the telescope is looking at light that is already 3,000 years old. When the realization was that the supernova may have already exploded, and news of the event just has not reached the telescope yet, it could happen Wednesday. These kinds of events are so catastrophic that it is the creation event on a tiny scale for universes. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, because one of the things that people don't realize is that maybe the Big Bang never really happened. Maybe it's just our perspective on the photon that allows the Big Bang to be thought of and thus a reality. But maybe instead the universe is a series of medium and small bangs all over the place, this supernova being one of them. And of course, once a supernova occurs, it consumes all the old matter that is now decayed into primitive forms like iron, and it turns it into complex, more heavy elements, and thus allows the complexity of life to continue in an entangled manner. So this probe is going to be pretty important, and we're going to keep tabs on it. We'll let you know when it launches and what instrumentation they're putting in it and what they're trying to understand. And the hastiness of it. I mean, 2029 with respect to cosmological events is local. I mean, it's 19 years, which is nothing. We don't barely have enough time to get the probe out there to give us some kind of lead on it, unless we really, really put a super fast propellant on this thing and get it out there so we get some kind of heads up as to what's coming. Not that we could do very much about it, except hightail it out to another solar system. Sounds interesting. So tonight's question is, how has the advent of 2012 changed your life? Now, I know you probably haven't heard that question before, but let's talk about it. How has the advent of 2012 and the events surrounding it, the rumors, the innuendo, the prognostications, the predictions, even the prophecies, how have they changed your life? And you hear a lot of questions that you can ask about this. It's very simple to say, maybe I've planned my retirement a little bit earlier. I'm going to build my fishing boat 5 years earlier than planned. But let's get serious about this. I mean, are you captive in a 10-year prison ship you placed upon yourself? The dilemma is that you have made your plans, and the universe is going to rewrite the stage upon which your plans were to be unfolded. I was talking to a very young college student the other day, and they came to the realization, because they'd seen a lot of specials on it, they'd spoken to some of their professors and discussed it in student groups and even one-on-one at parties and just get-togethers. Okay, 2012 is going to happen, and let's say it's going to be cataclysmic. Let's say the flares that we talked about in the movie Knowing really are a reality. Something like that is a reality. He said to me, do you realize that I'm a freshman, and 3 years from now, I'm going to be a senior, and all I will have done with my life is study and been at the beck and call of my professors, doing what they demand of me and not what I want to do with my life. Why should I waste my time studying so hard only to have it disappear in a solar flare? Interesting question, I said. Let's see what Dan from Florida has to say. Dan, you're on the program. Welcome.
Oh, yes, sir. I was just calling basically because of some of the 2012 issues you were briefly talking about. You know, okay. There's a whole host of things being said about what's going to happen on that date. You know, some of them incredibly negative, some of them slightly positive. Some of the people that are talking and saying some of the positive things might happen, unfortunately, according to my opinion, don't really have any credibility. I'm not referencing you. I'm referencing a certain person. I don't want to say his name. It's not you, though, man. But, but yeah, I mean, the whole deal with 2012 is I personally don't really think there's going to be anything, you know, serious that's going to happen unless somebody creates something that's going to happen. I mean, you know what I mean?
And, well, that level of creation could happen on a couple different levels. If you're talking about an act of terrorism, or you're talking about a collective consciousness somehow affecting the severity of the events already predicted, you may be right.
Okay, if anything is going to happen, I see a lot of people being very, very vague about what might happen in 2012. And I know for a fact, it's not a theory, that there are some people on our planet that have the philosophical belief that they would like to have a world government. And if anything were to happen in 2012, I think that would be their move for world government, would be right around there. That's the way I view it.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
as far as some of the other theories go, I would say that some of the other, I really don't want to mention all their names, but there's several people out there talking about theories for 2012. There's so many, it's just uncountable right now. Like I said, some positive, some negative. But I think a lot of these people, once 2012 comes and, you know, nothing really happens that they said was going to happen, I mean, all they're really going to have to say, you know, to retain at least some small amount of credibility, if any at all, would just be to say that they were metaphorical. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I do. I understand that. When I went to Mexico and I've been to Egypt and Tibet and I looked at what the ancients put together, especially in the Yucatan, what I saw was a very deep and profound and economic commitment to leaving a message, not for themselves, not even for the next generation. Clearly, it was left for us in this exact date, this December 21st, 2012. I had Jose Arguez on the program, which back in 1959 was there when the tomb of Pakal was opened, and the carvings on this giant king on his tomb were interpreted. And this is where the 2012 alignment with the rift in the Milky Way and its significance with the gravitational stability of the Earth was first uncovered. And then, I mean, we really didn't know much about that kind of stuff in 1960. But in 1990 we did. And when we started writing our book in 2001, what was really amazing is no one had really connected the dots between modern cosmology and what the Mayans were saying. And so when we put it in the first book, I'll be honest with you, I'm a cynic, I'm a scientist, I need proof, I need empirical data. We started seeing that the data was really lining up, that the severity and frequency of earthquakes was up about 25 times what it was the previous 200 years. There were a lot of things that made sense, and now we have these very fast, high-energy particles that Voyager ran into a couple of weeks ago. These are things that really were predicted in the codexes. So I'm thinking...
Okay, hold on a second. Sir, what about that machine they just turned on, the Large Hadron Collider? Now, doesn't that create some of those extremely fast-moving, supercharged-type particles?
Well, it could. If these particles are 6,000 degrees C, and they're leftovers from a series of supernovas that occurred, they don't really know when. In fact, they're pretty baffled as to why they're there at all. They should have dissipated 10, 20 million years ago, but they're still there, and they're pretty encapsulated. And they're beginning to enter our heliosphere. The Hadron, but CERN certainly has the capability of accelerating particles to that speed.
Well, no, I was going to ask, as far as the particles you're referencing, could they be from that machine, the Hadron Collider?
No, I don't think so. These are way out at the edge of the heliosphere, and Voyager is the one that actually ran into them unexpectedly.
Okay, all right. Okay, so what do you think is going to happen in 2012? Now, I actually have all three of your books. I read part of one, the first one. They are very well done. To be perfectly honest, I would rather, get the tapes and just listen to them, since there's so much reading.
Oh, there's also 1,500 pages. The first two are on audio. You should have got the audio books. If you'll send me an email address, I'll give you the first two on audio.
Yep. What do you mean, for free?
Yeah, sure. I'll send them to you for free. There's about 30 hours of reading that'll you can just listen.
Well,
so I read the third book.
Hey, man, if you want to send them to me for free, I'll take them. I will take
sure,
them.
No problem.
But I wasn't trying to ask for free, man. I'll pay for them. There's no problem.
No, it's okay. If you bought all three books as the trilogy, you would have got them for free anyway. But if you bought them one at a time, you might not have got that offer. But I'll be happy to give you both books for free.
Well, technically what I did, I bought all three separately, although at the same time, off of Amazon. You know how they got, private sellers on Amazon?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, unfortunately, the deal doesn't exist for Amazon, but that's okay.
No.
I would rather have you have the knowledge. You've bought the three books, and that's good. So, the first two books are on audio. We're working on the third book, but trying to launch an electric car company and record books at the same time is a little difficult, but we'll get it done. Anyway, keep going with your question.
But ultimately what I was basically saying was I have your books but haven't had a chance to actually go through all the material because there's so much. So I don't really know what your perspective is exactly on 2012. I know some of the people that claim to be associated with you and your groups and stuff like that, can't think of his name right now, but he was also on Coast to Coast AM. He was talking about all these mega disasters. And pole shifts, geological pole shifts and stuff like that. Brent Miller, who that is?
Oh, Brent Miller, right, with Intuitive Design, sure. Yeah, he did the whole shot.
Yeah, I believe he said that he was either associated with you somehow, or am I mistaken?
I was in a film that he did called The Horizon Project, and where we talked about the possibility of a pole shift. I mean, the probability is there. The evidence that they have occurred in the past is there. The sun does it every 22 years. So there's really no reason why the Earth can't go through a pole shift. We were just trying to figure out what would happen to the Earth if the poles actually did shift.
So now that leads me to my next question. If there was to be a pole shift, would that be in 2012? And obviously the consequences would be absolutely devastating if there was a geological pole shift. I mean, wouldn't that, spin some of the water around the Earth and, kind of rearrange it and rearrange the continents?
Well, it could if it was a geological. Now, we think it would be magnetic, which north would just swap for south. And there might be changes in the jet stream and the Gulf Stream, and certainly there'd be changes in migratory patterns. And I think that the coastlines would suffer a little bit. But I don't think it would be an extinction event.
Now, I could have sworn in his video, because I watched that Horizon video on YouTube, I could have sworn he was talking specifically about a geological pole shift, not a magnetic.
Yeah, I know. There was a gentleman on there who was talking about a geologic pole shift where the North Pole kind of slides down to where the horizon, or where the equator is now, or shifting somewhere in between. And when we look at the geological evidence, that's not really the way that it has occurred on the Earth. It shifts a few degrees at a time. Igneous rock, when it comes up from volcanic sources and it solidifies, it assumes the magnetic alignment of the Earth at that time. And so we have a geologic record of a rather vignette kind of layout of magnetic fields on the Earth, but not a complete, you know, 45 degree shift like what the other expert on the program suggested. And rather than refute that, I just supported the idea of a magnetic shift where all the rocks and trees and everything pretty much stay where they are, but the Coriolis effect, which is the gyroscopic alignment between a rotating crust and a rotating core, gets into an uncontrollable wobble and they actually roll over. But we really believe it's the core that will roll over, not the crust.
So what do you think is going to happen in 2012? That's my ultimate question.
Well, we only have 3 hours, so let's see here. I think, on the one end, we could say this is nothing more than, Y2K, nothing to get upset about. I'm buying property that matures in 2013, no problem. On the other hand, with Y2K, we didn't have post-classic civilizations spending 80% of their gross national product to leave a legacy in stone and gold and codexes, thousands and thousands of them, that explain that the Earth is going to line up with the rift in the Milky Way, the Sun is going to be in the middle, and on one side, and we're going to be in the middle, and this planar gravity, which we didn't even understand until we started building the...
Now, can I ask you a quick question, sir?
Yeah.
Can I ask you a quick question? Yeah, because now I was listening to, I believe it was Neil Tyson, who's also a... is he an astronomer?
Uh-huh.
Yes. Neil Tyson. He was on Coast to Coast AM, supposedly, to talk about some of the 2012 issues and stuff like that. One of the things he brought up was the fact, like some of the conspiracy theorists, like you're not a conspiracy theorist, but there are conspiracy theorists out there that say, like on the 21st of December in 2012, when the sun lines up with the Earth and with the center of the galaxy, all hell is going to break loose. But what he said is that happens every year. But that system, that alignment right there that I just described is a little bit different than what you're describing. You're saying, you know, I guess like our whole solar system is kind of going to go into almost like a galactic equator, you're saying?
Yeah, actually, that alignment that he's talking about does occur every year, but not with the actual plane of the rift of the Milky Way. And even Michio Kaku glazed over it the other day when he said that the alignment with Jupiter on the other side of the planet does that every 100 years. But not in this neighborhood, because we are now moving through a precession. This is the one thing that all these guys miss, the guys that are out there talking about. They're only talking about our solar system. What we're really talking about here is the solar system's alignment with the galaxy. That only occurs every 26,000 years.
But is this provable fact? I mean, like some of these mainstream physicists and astronomers, will they actually agree with you if you were to say that to them?
Yes. I had one of the most published astronomers. He's passed on now. He came on the program and we talked about a phenomenon which is called the black axiom. It's fairly well known. It isn't talked about a lot. It's a phenomenon that seems to have occurred about 25,000 years ago, where the solar system went through a cloud of dark matter, not like dark matter like the code word, but I mean like dark iron particles or carbon particles, and it coated every single body in our solar system. The fast-moving bodies like Earth, it rotates every 24 hours, pretty much got an even coating. But bodies that move very slowly, like our moon, which only rotates once every 28 days, got half-coated. And we back that up by looking at some of the larger asteroids, which have very, very low rotational rates. And sure enough, they're half-coated. And we know that it happened about 25,000 years ago, because when we look at our moon, the dark side of the moon actually faces us. It always faces us. The other side of the moon is much, much brighter, six times brighter than the side that faces us.
But the side that faces us is pretty well uniformly coated, and there are not very many meteorite strikes which would have made white spots in the dark coating. The rate of collision of the moon matches up with the 25,000-year timing. So it's about time for us to travel through this dark cloud of matter again.
So are we actually inside of this galactic equator right now? And if not, when are we going to pass over it? Would it be the 21st of December in 2012 that we pass over it, or would it kind of be like a couple months before or a couple months after?
That's a really good question. Right now, they're really trying to get a handle on how fast the solar system is moving through the universe. Of course, Earth goes around the sun at 18.5 miles per second. The solar system revolves around the galaxy. They're thinking somewhere around 40 to 50 miles a second. So if this is the rate, okay, then somewhere about this year, we should be entering the leading edge of the bell curve of what we think these particle and gravitational collisions should be. It should peak in 2012, but we may be ramping up to it now. And I think the increase in the last 25 years of earthquakes and volcanoes, these rogue waves, which used to occur about once every 3 months, are now occurring once every month, once every 21 days. And these rogue waves are, they're subsonic, but barely, 450 miles an hour. As long as they stay in the deep water, they don't really cause capsizing events, although ships are recording them about once every 21, 28 days, which is very high frequency from what they normally occur. If these waves turn perpendicular to the shore, the tsunamis would be in the 500-meter range.
Okay, so we would be entering into this galactic equator zone in 2010, and we would see, like, escalated weather events, like, starting this year, you're saying?
Yes. What normally would occur if you start into gravitational events like this are what are called, I don't know, you could call them super hurricanes. These are counterclockwise rotations in the northern hemisphere, somewhere in the range of 3,000 miles in diameter. Now, a normal hurricane is about 100 miles in diameter, but these are around 3,000 miles in diameter, and what they do is they take moisture from the sea and Arctic air, and they just dump snow. And lo and behold, this winter, we have a completely white northern hemisphere from China to L.A. Just about everything is white.
I've got a question for you then, sir. Now, okay, a lot of the people pushing the global warming theories and facts ideas, they are kind of associating it with increased weather activity as well. So these increased weather activities that you're talking about, they would be more associated with the solar system going into this galactic plane and not having anything
really
to do with the CO2 production that we are putting out as a species.
It could be. I know that the Earth was warming up until 1998. It can be said even till 1999. But then all the planets in the solar system were warming. Saturn's atmospheric pressure went up 18%, which would have been an extinction event here on this planet. But that's a big jump in 18 years, as long as Cassini's been going around it. I think some of Jupiter saw 30% increases in atmospheric pressure. So,
okay,
what we're experiencing now, I think, is a lull. We went into a solar minimum. The solar wind has been so low for so long, over almost 700 days now, that the galactic wind is beginning to encroach upon the heliosphere. In fact, it's stretching it out like a big bullet shape instead of it being strong enough to maintain its round shape. This is stuff that no one's ever noticed before because we didn't have the instrumentation, which really makes it remarkable that a people like the Maya could record this in stone and say, listen, when you get ready to change from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius, watch for this.
Watch for this huge disaster, you're saying.
Well, it's a potential for it. You know, you asked me if man's activities had an effect on global warming. I think that it does. But the real question is, as the Earth goes through these let's call them normal, oscillations in temperature, there's probably a safety margin where life doesn't end. Yeah, it gets uncomfortable, but we persevere, we adapt, we overcome, we survive. The real question is, can man's activities be enough, 0.5%, 2% maybe, to push it over the edge and begin gasifying that ocean of methane that's at the bottom of the sea? As long as that stays liquid down at the bottom of that cold, high-pressure ocean, I think we'll make it. But if that methane starts boiling off and coming through the ocean and getting into the atmosphere, we're in a thermal runaway situation there.
Okay, I just wanted to isolate a quick question real quick. You were talking specifically about those super tsunamis and super hurricanes. Now, those, I just want to isolate them for a second. Talk about
sure.
that for a second. Those particularly, if we were to get those would be pretty much almost exclusively be coming from the idea of us going through this galactic plane and not from man-made CO2, correct?
Yeah, I would say so, yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right.
And maybe this is the way the Earth goes through its allergic reactions. You know, it cleanses all the thinkings and doings of mankind. Because if you really look at us sociologically as a people,
so it's going to cleanse. Without, it's going to cleanse mankind.
Well, I was just going to say
that sounds dangerous.
80% of our population lives within 20 miles of a coast, and that includes the major rivers. Uh-huh. But it's the same on every nation, you know. And if you have a 500-meter tsunami hit the East Coast, Florida is a sandbar. You know, that water is going to lap up against the eastern slopes of the Appalachians, and everything from Savannah to Boston is going to be wiped clean. That's not an extinction event, but it's pretty much a house cleaning.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay, so you're saying that this is basically going to pick up this year in 2010 and escalate till 2012 and then drop off. Perhaps slightly after 2012 or what?
Yes, I think it'll tail off after 2012, but hopefully we're not rubbing two sticks together to make fire by then. The idea is to be forewarned and not make profit on it, not certainly take political advantage of it, but as a people, my gosh, how hard is it to, you know, move and survive?
I hear you, man. I totally hear you. My next question would be, I'm not wishing for this stuff. Trust me. You're just saying the science is there, and, I mean, you're kind of implying that it's going to happen either way. I mean, if we're going through this belt, like you're saying, the Earth has, like, these allergic reactions when we go through this belt, this galactic equator, you know, that pretty much says to me it's going to happen either way. How bad, you know, how good, don't really know yet because we haven't been there. But anyway, as far as like 2012 goes, I know you pushed back your expedition to that date. And that is like the final time, the final try for you to actually attempt this expedition into the Hall of Earth. So if there's all this chaos going on, like these huge hurricanes and stuff like that going on, all that stuff going on, that would obviously stop you from going on that event, right?
Well, it could. I can tell you, we're going to be facing 10-story waves, so it's not going to be a pleasure cruise as it is. But you're right. I mean, I can tell you, these tankers that are out there, they're getting more and more worried. Some of these are 3,000 feet long, and they get very worried about these rogue waves because they're fast enough and strong enough to snap a ship like that in half.
Yes, I'm kind of thinking. You know, you said that was the final time you could actually try that, so there's no other time after 2012 that you could try that expedition when things
well,
move
here's,
up.
Here's,
weather,
you know,
nice
when the
like
Northwest Passage opened up for the first time in 2007, it was just a very strange Arctic
wind. What's that, sir? I didn't hear part of what you said.
I said when the Northwest Passage in 2007 opened up for the first time in, I don't know, they're saying 200,000 years, it was a very strange wind. It just blew for a long time, and the ice shelf caught the wind just right, and it snapped off, and it opened up the Northwest Passage. Now it's begun to refreeze, and I think 2010 is doable, maybe 2011. We actually have three cruises that we're planning. This year, 2011 and 2012. The one this year is called Genesis, or Freedom. The one in 2011 is called Genesis, and the one in 2012 is called Genesis. Freedom, Gemini, and Genesis. If we get a chance to do all three of them, I'll be surprised. I think we can get the one this year done. We have been speaking with our investors this weekend, and hopefully we can get the deposit in place and make it happen. I think it's time.
You're saying that you're going to go through with the expedition, because I'm actually having some trouble hearing you. It might be my phone, though. You're saying you have three expeditions to the North Pole planned, correct?
Yes, that's correct. We're going to do the first one this summer, the second one in 2011, and the third one summer solstice 2012.
Okay. And you're saying you guys are, like, ready to go for this expedition this year?
Yeah, we're ready to go. We're way overstaffed. In fact, we could trim the staff, but it has always been a matter of money, but we don't really focus on the money because that's not how the manifestation works. Now the investor has stepped forward. He's very committed, and we think we can work out the details by the end of this month and get the deposit in place and get the
All right, sir. That leads me to my final questions before I get off the air with you and let you take another caller.
Yep.
I'm just wondering about what's going to happen when you actually go and do this expedition. Will there be societal conditions, societal changes for us? Will you meet anybody when you go there? I know you've kind of hinted very, very slightly in some of the comments regarding this expedition that you might meet other people there, other civilizations, our brothers and sisters, right?
Well, if they're there, we're going to meet them.
What's going to happen
with that? We're going to be prepared.
You're going to be prepared.
Right.
I was just asking, what do you think is going to happen?
No good scientist would throw out data because it doesn't match his paradigm. But a lot of scientists do throw out data that doesn't match their paradigm.
No, I'm open to an interesting thing. I was just wondering what you think is going to happen when you attempt this. That's what I was asking.
Well, I think that, you know, there are people who say the powers that be will never let you make this happen, but that's really not true. They don't care. They don't even know we exist. And even if we did make it and make the film, I think they would think it was quaint and entertaining. However, I can tell you from my travels and my lectures and mail that I get, more people know about the Hollow Earth than knew about Middle Earth before the movies came out. This
what, the Lord of the Rings movies you're talking about?
Right, exactly. This really has the potential of making Everest look like a picnic. And it also has the possibility of really connecting the dots sociologically for the world to really have hope that we are going to survive as a race.
Now, why is that? I just want to isolate that question. Why do we get hope by meeting their society?
That's an excellent question, and I wish I had the answer to it. But as I go around and lecture on this very scientific expedition, I have the strangest, let me put it this way. It is high strangeness. When groups come to you and say, you know, I have dreamt of a hollow earth my whole life since I was a little kid, and I know you're going to find something up there. There is like this almost universal channeling that people have with this inner earth. Now, I can't say that I have or I have not. I have to look at things scientifically, and my job is to bring back the olive branch, is to bring back the bolt, the nut, the gold plate, something besides innuendo and blurry photographs. And that's what we're going to do.
I totally hear you. That sounds good. I just wanted to talk to you real quick about a book that I actually read. I'm not sure if you've read it. It was called Hollow Earth by Raymond Bernard.
Yeah, I've read it.
Now, see, you have read it. Yes,
yeah.
The only thing that concerns me about that whole situation with the Hollow Earth, obviously that book talks about how the Hollow Earth does exist as a factual matter. That's what they say, it's a fact. And there's creatures living inside there. I'm not sure if they said, it was kind of debatable in the book, like what types they were and things like that. Some suggestions said they were small brown people. Some people, I believe, said they were more human-like. But overall, it seemed like they had a dictatorship. And they had a, quote, king of the world who ran their society down there for them. That's pretty much a quote right out of that book.
Right.
And also, those people down inside of the hollow earth believe that we surface dwellers should have a one-world government in a world police, in a world, you know, like a world type system, like economic system, things like that. So, I mean, what do you think about that when, you know, people associate that type of material with your expedition?
Yeah, I don't know what to think about that. We don't. I don't have anything to say about that. I mean, this is a scientific expedition, and truthfully, it's for entertainment purposes only, officially. To say that there is a sociological trigger that's going to make us switch over to a one-world government under a single benevolent leader, that's not our place. If it happens and such a benevolent leader does pop up, I hope he lives forever, because typically their sons are bastards that are stupid and end up plunging the whole world into war again and again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with, you know, as far as that goes. But, I mean, your whole expedition just sounds incredibly interesting. I wish I could go out on it myself. I know it costs a lot of money, though, because I looked it up. I mean, if I had the money, I would go. But, you know, the only thing, you know, I just can't think of what you're going to find when you go there besides, you know, what we're talking about right now. I mean, you really think you're going to find, like, absolutely nothing inside
of the
earth?
That's why we're excited about going, because we just don't know what we're going to find. We may
find
whales and ice.
Just ice, you're saying?
Yeah, we may just find whales and ice. On the other hand, something might move, and we get it on film.
See.
Well, listen, I'm going to take my top of the hour break about 9 minutes late. I really appreciate the call, Dan, and when we get back, we'll put David on with us and hear what he has to say.
Okay, Brooks, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. All right, Earth Explorers, we need to take just a really quick break. We ran a little over, but it's okay. Don't panic. The reason we ran over is because we had some technical difficulties starting up, but not to worry. We'll be back after this very brief musical interlude. Thank you. We appreciate your patience working with us. This is X Squared Radio. We're beginning our second hour. I'm Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from Eastern Kentucky. Our AccuWeather window forecast is about 24 degrees, clear skies, snow still on the ground, a little uncharacteristic for this area. Second hour getting ready to begin. Just wanted to let you know, 2012 is one of the hottest subjects out there, and we don't want you to despair at all, because there is hope. And the hope is you. The hope is the consciousness, the creative energy that you can inject into the equation. I can tell you that we are the creators, we are Source, and it will have its effect. And you're listening to Lisa Gerhard and Peter Bork. And this is off of the their album that they did together. We appreciate you. Anyway, I just want to let you know that the lines are full, and we will do our very best to get everybody on. And here we go. We're talking about 2012 and how it has affected your life and what you're going to do about it, how it's going to change you. We'll be back in 40 seconds. Don't go away. All right, our goal is to get back to your calls right away. X Squared Radio, second hour, on fire tonight, this chilly night across the United States and, in fact, across the world. David from Idaho on line one, you're on the program. Welcome.
Hello, Brooks.
Hopefully David is still there. Did he hold through the break? We'll find out in just a few seconds. Ah, there he is.
Hello.
Hello, David. Welcome to the program.
Good. Nice to speak with you again. I was just wondering, and this is probably like asking Tina Turner to sing One More Mountain, Ain't No Mountain High Enough again, but I was just reading, I don't know if you're familiar with Cliff High of Half Past Human.
No, I haven't. I haven't read him.
Ah. Well, he was basically looking into Patrick Garrell. He wrote the Orion Prophecy.
Oh, okay, sure.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he actually... this fellow Cliff High went a little bit further with Garrell's research in decoding Maurice Cotterell's work in the Mayan prophecies. It seems to me like his mathematics and everything that he's been going through does point to a crustal shift. He found historical and geological evidence for hundreds, if not thousands, of such pole and crustal shifts. You know, even in the ancient Chinese text and the Vedic and even pre-Vedic text, not to mention, of course, that the Egyptian evidence pointing to that. I don't know. I was just wondering if you've really just dismissed the possibility of a crustal shift, or
no, I haven't dismissed it. It's just that that the evidence points to rather incremental crustal shifts. Even the pyramids. When we look at the way the pyramid is aligned, it's aligned very, very precisely with the star Sirius. And given that the pyramid was built, and of course this is according to Robert Balval, who's a pretty good expert on the subject, the pyramid was built somewhere around 10,000 years ago, and it was pointing at the star Sirius then, and it's still pointing at the star Sirius, which the pyramid being at the absolute epicenter of the land masses of the Earth it would imply that the Earth has not gone through a significant crustal shift in at least 10,000 years. And when we look at the Nordic record, and this is where a lot of ancient geotechnical and volcanic activity took place, we have in the igneous rock a vignette of gravitational alignments, but they are incremental, somewhere on the order of 20 degrees over 3 billion years. It's not something that's very sudden and catastrophic, but magnetic pole shifts are sudden, and the level of catastrophism is the debate.
Yes. Well, according to Garrel and this fellow Chris High's calculations, this pole shift takes place around every 11,500 years. And so, I don't know. It seems, and what he's talking about is the angular momentum of the planets are pulling on the sun's equator, which distorts its magnetic forces within the sun, and more or less binds it up to where it has to break free, and then he's saying what happens at that point is some sort of a huge EMP type event. And magnetic disruption that would really do some serious changes to especially the planets on the inner planets, you know, of the solar system.
So, well, the sun pretty regularly every quarter century or so goes through a pole shift. It's due for one at the solar maximum, which they expect to be somewhere around 2012. Of course, we're way behind schedule. We're about 700 days behind schedule on this solar cycle. But it does seem to be clipping along pretty well. As I said, sunspot 1040 showed up today, and it is one from solar cycle 24. And it's, you know, four or five times the size of Earth. It's not large, but it certainly isn't small. It's clear that it's not a catastrophic event for the sun because it goes through it a lot. It may or may not be catastrophic for the Earth, but it certainly is going to move the jet stream and the Gulf Stream and will change migratory patterns and fishing patterns, which will definitely cause us to change our behavior.
Absolutely. Well, the other thing that they were saying is that... If in fact it does have a crustal shift, he's saying that the evidence shows that civilization basically started over with kind of like a boat culture, you know, people on boats because once the ocean stopped sloshing around and whatnot, then people were able to come back on land and establish, but I don't know. Anyway, if you're interested in this guy's postulation, you just go to halfpasthuman.com and scroll down a little bit, and you can see his exposition. He was on Jeff Rentz not too long ago with about a two-hour expose on his thoughts on this. And that may be another thing.
It definitely sounds interesting. I'd love to interview the guy. There are a lot of broadcasters out there who will talk to people who sound good on the radio and write books. But when they come on this program, they really have their feet to the fire. I mean, this is where we talk about the science of it, and it's not enough to say it's radioactive. You're going to have to tell me what the frequency is.
Yes. Well, you know, you might want to look into that because he is a very... fascinating human, and he does predictive linguistics, and that's the basis of his website. But he's a pretty sharp cookie. I think you'd have a good show if you could get him on.
That's what we're all about. We'll get him on. He's a leading scientist in his field. We definitely want to have him on it. So the big thing that we want to talk about here is you don't know how you would have felt when you go through these 2012 events. You can say it now because, you know, we're still 2 years away from this rendezvous with the rift in the Milky Way. We're always so smart when we look back at things. We can even say that was the only way I knew how to do it. It's a great excuse. I didn't know any better. I didn't have any other plans. And it has been used by many. But the future is most accessible to you. Now, you can deny it. You can say that life is nothing but destiny. You can say that there are powers that be that determine what you have and who you are. But the truth is, and I use that word rather than the word reality, is that you are in total control of whether your sandcastle is washed away or not when the waves come. You're in control. The decisions that you make set up the stage for how things are going to happen to you. Take a quick look around you. Now, shift everything forward 20 years. Look at the children, the adults, your mate, even your house. Is this where you want to be? Does the vision disturb you in any level? Are you with the person you have always wanted to be? Are your children with you in a home where you want to be? Do you think you should stick with a bad situation at home? Or do you think if you can make better for yourself or at least escape a bad situation that you should pick up your small children and move to something that for a future for which you have control? Do you have the feeling that you are older and you really don't want to be there? What are the feelings you are collecting by this point? It's really important that you have a look at that. Because it might be the subconscious way that we pick up energy from the universe, that we pick up on the resonations, the very subtle changes in society, the very subtle changes in our interaction with one another, our very subtle connection with what might be an energetic pulse of the planet itself. It does happen, and it does make scientific sense. When we wrote our books in 2004 about the 2012 end times, we had all these ideas, but now the evidence is unfolding in the third dimension that the events will happen pretty much the way it was written. Now, don't think that we have not wondered whether or not they are turning out this way because we wrote the book about them in this way. We do think about these things, our thoughts and our predictions. May have manifested a solid version of this somewhere out in the future. And now tens of thousands of people have read that, and now their consciousness is on it. And maybe that has had somewhat of a creative effect on it just by its mere observation. That's why book three was written the way it was. The second half of that book provides the tools and is that you do have the ability to make those changes to what is going to happen in 2012. In my many conversations with George Norrie, we had the same thing happen. We had the same discussion. We realized that it was all doom and gloom, and there needed to be some kind of message of hope. There needed to be something that people could wrap their hands around and utilize like a toolbox and try to make changes in the way 2012 is going to unfold on the earth. So if things are from that dimension, why would they care? Because we write about them. That's a really good question. How do we manifest things in this dimension pulled out of another dimension and solidified in this one? I can tell you that it's real. I was, as I've mentioned on this program before, I was up at the Hanford LIGO. That's the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. And I'm sorry if you work at Caltech and like to call it LIGO. That's fine. You guys made up the name. But to me, it makes sense to call it LIGO. So I'm going to call it LIGO. But I'm talking to Dr. Fred Robb, who's the guy that's run that facility up there in Hanford. A very sharp physicist, very open, very progressive. He's been there for 15 years, done an excellent job running this facility. And if you get a chance to make your way up into the parts of Washington State, I highly recommend going by and seeing this facility. It's really quite staggering to see 4-kilometer-long concrete tubes that they literally evacuate all the air out of and shoot lasers down it so they can measure gravitational waves in the universe. Now, they haven't been successful doing it yet because the sensitivity of the electronics, stabilizing the laser, making sure that the mirrors stay perfectly vibration-free, coordinating it with the other sister observatory in Louisiana so that they can make sure that they are listening to the universe and not some truck driving by or waves crashing on the Louisiana shore or mild earth tremors up in Washington State. Once they are able to tie these two together and they're both up and running, then you can tune out all these local events and listen only to the events of the universe. Now, they have been successful in duplicating listening to things like coalescing neutron stars, but not black holes yet. You know, black holes is a great theory, and we have the perturbation effects of black holes in the universe, especially in the center of galaxies. But they're not directly observable because they don't emanate anything except for these gravitational waves. Now, if the gravitational waves are occurring all the time, it's sort of like white noise. How do you listen to white noise if you can't find a quiet place to calibrate? That's a good question. They're trying to answer that question as we speak. However, for about the last month or so, the LIGO Observatory in Hanford has been operating with enhanced electronics, giving it at least an order of magnitude more sensitivity. And it's quite possible that by 2012, they will be able to directly measure a black hole. It will be a breakthrough in direct measurement of the universe. Now, if things are from that dimension, as we said, why would they care because we write about them? Well, because our observational forces as sentient beings awake and alive in the universe are very, very powerful. It might be because we have put our mind on it that they will happen regardless. But our perception of what is going on is affected by our awareness of it. Sort of like hearing about the Red Sox winning the World Series and actually watching them win the World Series game by game. You see, you are affected by the events actually occurring instead of observing it after the fact. So if you're a reader of the Arc of Millions of Years series, you are now involved in the Red Sox game that we are equating to watching 2012 unfold before our very eyes. Your observation is tied up in it. Your fears, your trepidation, very, very powerful energy put into that equation. What we want to do and what we did with the third volume was to try to turn that energy into a creative force, into a steering force, so that we could move the extinction event away from our planet and actually learn from it. Your watching the game doesn't affect the outcome much, but it does affect the way you perceive the struggle and victory of that team and how it might inspire you to not give up on something you dream about. To watch the struggle of the Red Sox team during that World Series was really something. It really made people believe that you could overcome anything. You'll remember they were overcoming the curse of the Bambino. So let's ask the question again. And the phone lines are open. 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. How has your perception of 2012 affected your plans for the future? What are you doing? What are you thinking? What are you worried about? You know, I was talking, as I said, to a student the other day, and he said, you know, it's not fair. I'm the class of 2011. When I graduate, I will have worked so hard to learn all this stuff. And then, boom, we're back to making fire by rubbing two sticks together. It's not fair. Why should I waste my time sitting around in class when the world's going to end in 2012 anyway? You realize that how profound that perception really is and how widespread it is? This is a student at a university, and there are many universities and there are many students, but this is a question that's being asked all over the place. I hear it in airports. I hear it when I'm out lecturing. I hear it when people write me mail. You know, I was going to do this as my long 15-year plan, but now 2012 is going to happen, and I'm going to make this move and this change, and I'm so happy. What a great sound that is, people. I talked to another person who said, man, I saved for 2 years to be able to buy my new Corvette. You mean I will only have one summer to drive it, and then it will be impossible to get fuel for it? He said, where is the outrage? I feel that. I feel that same thing. I'm in the middle of a 15-year business plan myself, building this electric car company out here in eastern Kentucky. By the way, things are going pretty well with it. If you're interested, you can access the website, email me about it, go to the website, check the vehicles out. Perhaps we can take this question to the next level. If you knew that you could change everything in the world in December of 2012, what would it be? Let me ask the question again. If you knew that you could change anything in the world in December of 2012, what would it be? Give us a call. Let me know. 415-762-1161. I'm not playing Santa Claus here. I'm just telling you that if you will vocalize what it is you want to change in the world in December of 2012, millions of people will hear it, and they will resonate with it. And perhaps that consciousness added to the vocalization of your dream might be enough to make it happen. It can't hurt. Go ahead and give us a call and let us know what you would change, anything, in the world in December of 2012. Whatever you desire on a global scale would be manifested on that date. Now tell us what it would be. Give us a call. 415-762-1161. Some people tell me that they want to stay away from the coasts. They are afraid the seas will leap from their bounds and great walls 500 meters high and wash away the beaches and coastal cities. Hey, it could happen. Does this possibility cause you to think about moving to higher ground or to the more productive inlands to escape that impending tidal shift? Are you worried about the waves lapping up against the eastern side of the Appalachians or the western side of the Rockies? If you are, then where do you plan to be in 2012? Or are you planning to head for a small town in the mountains, the upper deserts, build an ark? Are you going to wait till November of 2012 to make it happen? Or are you going to set your sights on it and try to make things happen? Try to make a paradise wherever you are. Try to get to an area where the waves might not be crashing. And when we get to 2012 and nothing happens, are you going to say, oh, I wasted all this effort, nothing happened? My question is, why would you fear this? Why would you fear that? Don't even worry about it. Dream about where you would be in 2012, 3 years from now. Actually, you have just a little more than 2 years, 11 months now. What would you save for? What would you buy? Where would you move? What stars would you be looking at night? Would you be in the mountains? Would you be in the desert? Would you be in the Great Plains? Would you be in the north, the south? Use your imagination and let's see if we can move this world. It would be sort of like going to the doctor for a routine checkup, and the doctor with his team of experts tells you that although you feel fine and everything is working the way it's supposed to, you're going to die in 2 years. How would you change the way you live? Would you continue to procrastinate and delay your dreams? Or will you get up and begin to live the way you want? You know, we have all kinds of closets. You can stay in the closet or you can come out of the closet. I think a poor time to come out of the closet is right at the end. You might as well come out of the closet now. Get the feeling that we're running out of time. If you are a closet archaeologist, get out there with a shovel. Buy you some boots and some camo pants and get out there. If you always wanted to go to Tibet or Scotland or China or Mexico, will you just go to Travelocity and look up the plane ticket so at least you know how much it costs? Will you quit sitting at home and saying, oh, first I got to have $1 million. Forget about it. Concentrate on where you want to be and what you want to see, and the opportunity will fall in your lap. I mean, do we look back on our lives from the year 2013 and say, I could have done this, or I could have done that, or I could have seen this place or that place, or I could have been with the one I really love? Or I could have said to myself, why in the world would I keep this person captive in a relationship when she or he does not love me? Why don't you get out of prison? You have the keys on your belt right now. Some of you would say, I could have found the one I love. How important can that be? What job is worth that? Consider all the 2012 prognosticators. And trust me, the stage is overflowing with people who know nothing about it, but look great on TV. Oh yes, there'll be no shortage of History Channel specials and Discovery Channel specials and Coast to Coast specials, and you're going to hear great speakers and you're going to see lovely people with lots of influence tell you one story or another. I know they're putting one together called Seekers 2012 right now. Who knows who they're going to have on it? I can tell you one thing. These publications are put together so hastily with such poor research that you're not going to get the true story. You're going to get whatever is going to be cheap to put on and they can digitally enhance. The History Channel specials will abound. They will talk about doom and gloom and the end of the world and polar shifts and planetary collisions. But would they tell you the truth? The truth is more simple and more amazing than you can imagine. The program coordinators on these various shows like Seekers 2012 or Science or 2020 will tell you that 2012 will happen regardless of whether you are here or not. They will tell you that when a tree falls in the forest, it makes a noise, whether you're there or not. Well, the truth is that 2012 will occur, but only because you are here. And you are an integral piece of the amazing consciousness puzzle. Whether you are conscious or not, you will be affecting the events right up to the moment they are history. And this is why you left the message for yourselves. And this is why you built the temples and the pyramids and the signs in the Nazca Mountains. Was it for the ancient astronauts landing from space? Or was it because we knew that in our day, we would be flyers of the skies? Maybe it wasn't them, but us, who would see the patterns from the sky. And we knew the patterns would cause us to pay attention to the calendar. You are hearing this, and it is burning within you because you know it is true. If you don't know what the signs are in the Nazca Mountains, there are several books out there. One is called History is Wrong by Eric von Däniken. Read it, and you can learn all about it. We'd love to have him on the program sometime, but X Squared Radio just isn't on the radio dial for him. No problem. We're happy to talk about his amazing book and recommend it, Eric von Däniken. You know, one of the interesting things, while we send our probes out into space and learn the things that we learn, is we're gathering data that's rather remarkable. And we don't really understand why we're getting it. But let's see if we can talk about it with Mark. Mark from Albuquerque, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Dr. Agnew.
How are you?
Hope you're staying warm.
Oh, yes. I have the electric heater blowing under the desk as we speak.
Well, to answer your first question, what do I expect of 2012? And I'll go on to the next one, but of 2012, I expect it to be a moment of manifestation for whatever we choose to manifest. And will December 22nd, 2012 going to be here? Yes. And so will the 23rd and the 24th. Now, how we experience it will definitely be how we expect it to be, how we intend it to be, just as the next moment from now will be as we intend it to be. So my hope for the world, my wish for the world in December 2012 is that we have reached a stage of knowing we have abundance if we choose it, that we have peace, both inner and outer, if we choose it, that we have knowledge if we choose it. And this is what I expect, and this is what I intend, just as I intend that the next moment will be wonderful because I am intentionally in this moment putting out this intention.
Well, I like it. I mean, that's what reality is. There are 7 billion realities on the earth right now, and when they're all thrown into the blender, the universe is the result. So what in particular in 2012, when we're talking about peace events, obviously somebody's got to press the Control-Alt-Delete key here, because we're running a program of war and conquest and haves and have-nots. So how do we reboot this program? How do we finally get, for instance, the Middle East to say, okay, look, no more killing. I know you're probably one brother ahead of me, but you know what? I'm going to throw down my weapons. Let's have peace.
How do we do that? By setting the intention that it's possible, number one, that, yes, you can come to terms. You can live together. Many do in that area. Not all pick up weapons. Not all pick up rocks. It is a very small minority that make the news. It really is. Most want to live in peace with each other. They have their hang-ups and the baggage, but just as anything else, once they meet each other and actually communicate their fears, I fear you because of this, and the other one says, I fear you because of this, and one says, well, that's silly because I don't want to do that, and the other one says, that's silly, I don't want to do that. It comes down to the individuals, not those who negotiate. It comes down to each person setting the intention. And I'll tell you what, I would say that the majority of that area aren't living in that reality. They're affected by it, but they're affected by the minority, not by the majority.
Well, I understand that. I know a lot about the area because I've got a friend that lives in that area, a very dear friend. And I can tell you that there's violence on both sides, although the violence on one side is quite organized and it's quite regimented. And it is peace through superior firepower. It's peace through intimidation. It's peace through automatic and irrefutable retaliation. The other side is more chaotic. It's more emotional. It's more ideological. And I don't really pretend to understand the complexities of it. I'm just saying, at some point, if we're going to have peace on this planet and try to live as a race, as a human race on a rock in the middle of space, somebody has to manifest a more clear picture of what that peace has got to look like. And it has to be a peace without violence.
I agree. I totally agree with that. I mean, that is the outer peace, is the absence of violence. And how can we, sitting here, other than having the intention of find your love for your brother, you know, affect that? As I said, it's up to those individuals to come to that realization that it's a self-defeating process. It's self-perpetuating in that the revenge things come in, which is emotional, but it comes down to fear and anger, which is a product of fear. So it's it's amazing how much they each have in common that they can't find that commonality because they focus on the differences. But like I said, I'm not in that situation. I haven't had my family killed. Okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I haven't been under the threat of a bomb going off while I'm having coffee. So it's difficult for me to say, here, this is what you do. Poof. Here you go. Other than say, it is possible if you stop. Stop firing your guns. Stop shooting your rockets. Just, you know, you need to stop that because you can't talk because of the noise. And
that's true.
And the outcome
somebody's got to lay it down. And I can tell you, you know, that the force on the one side is reactionary. And the other force is antagonistic. And if the antagonizer would just not take action, then the retaliation wouldn't happen. And if they would just stop antagonizing, the absence of the retaliation would feel like peace. And after a while, it would be peace.
And there are changes that are occurring, even now. I mean, there's still things going on, but it's lessening. It's not as much as it was. And you and I are the same age, so we know this, you know, for as long as we've been alive, this has been going on. And
well, that's true. And now the tensions are not just, you know, local skirmishes and throwing bottles and rocks and having houses bulldozed down. Now we're talking about a very outwardly, openly antagonistic leadership of a large country, some 50 million people, openly defying anti-nuclear proliferation rules, and it will get to a point of no return. And I can tell you, just 3 weeks ago, Israeli jets flew over Lebanon, were fired on. Now, no one got hurt, but the fact that they flew over, probably snapped a bunch of pictures and flew back, means, you know, they're staging for it. And I can tell you from my very close and loving contacts in that area, it is not a mystery to these people that these tensions do exist, and the Israeli people know that it has already been pre-planned. It's just a matter of when. And I think what we as a planet need to manifest is a different plan. Different plan.
Well, but by the same token, it doesn't matter what we as a planet manifest. I mean, we as I said, we put this out, our intentions, which is the basis for the manifestation. But on the other hand, those that would seek to manifest something differently also have their intentions. And if they have weapons too, I mean, I will send out the intention, don't pull a trigger. Okay. But does that mean that that person won't overcome that manifestation and not pull the trigger? No. I mean, it's up to the individual choice. I mean, it's individual free will. It is part of what we have and part of our power in manifestation. So it is up to these individuals to come to this. And the thing is that this understanding is growing exponentially in everyone. I see it all around.
Why don't we manifest something that doesn't have anything to do with changing a person's motivation or actions? How about if we just manifest that none of the cordite works?
Yes. Yes.
You could go ahead and pull the trigger, and nothing is going to happen.
As I stated last week about the aerosols, I practiced that today, and it worked swimmingly. So yes, you can transmutate. You can use your intention to cause physical changes to occur. That's
a good one. Thank you for the suggestion. I'll put that out there too.
we can't, you know, force our will upon another person. But we can definitely make the cordite not work.
Yes, yes. But it's a great show or program that you have this evening. And I hope others, now that the phones are back up, can get through. Very, very nice that the phones went down and I got to call in and speak with you because you were booked.
it was a Comcast error. It wasn't our error. It just, you know, 30 gigs, 50 gigs one way or the other. And it's cold out there and people are home surfing the web. So it takes up a lot of bandwidth. And listen, we really appreciate the call, Mark. Always. Hope you and Mariah and your wife are doing great.
Oh, we all are, and I send my intention of love and blessings to you and your family. And much, much joy and warmth for you.
Thank you very much, my friend.
All right, have a good night.
All right, talk to you later. All right, Earth Explorers, end of hour two. We've certainly had our challenges with Comcast tonight. It's not a big challenge, no problem. Just a little technical difficulties here and there, but we overcome. We'll take a brief musical interlude, and we'll be back for hour three. Don't go away. Thomas Gerard and Peter Bork. Great mind-opening music. Using data from Voyager, we have discovered a strong magnetic field just outside the solar system, explains lead author Merav Ofer, a NASA heliophysics guest investigator from George Mason University. This magnetic field holds the interstellar cloud together and solves the long-standing puzzle of how it can exist at all. The fact that the fluff, they're calling it, is strongly magnetized means that other clouds in the galactic neighborhood could be too. Eventually, the solar system will run into some of them, and their strong magnetic fields could compress the heliosphere even more than it is compressed now. Additional compression could allow more cosmic rays to reach the inner solar system, and that could be interesting for Earth because those frequencies end up on the surface of our planet. Now here is the amazing thing. The fluffy flow is coming from Sirius and heading for Earth. The discovery has implications for the future when the solar system will eventually bump into other similar clouds in our arm of the Milky Way galaxy. Astronomers call the cloud we're running into now the local interstellar cloud, or local fluff for short. It's about 30 light years wide and contains a wispy mixture of hydrogen and helium atoms at a temperature of 6,000 degrees C. The existential mystery of the fluff has to do with its surroundings. About 10 million years ago, a cluster of supernovas exploded nearby, creating a giant bubble of million-degree gas. The fluff is completely surrounded by this high-pressure supernova exhaust and should be crushed or dispersed by it, but it's not. You can't figure out why it's still there. It's a mystery. One thing's for sure, we're going to be running into it, and we're going to run into it in about 40 seconds. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Don't go away. Final hour of X Squared Radio. You can call in 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. We're discussing 2012, not the actual event so much as how it's affecting you, what you're doing to change your plans. What is your manifestation for 2012? A perhaps deeper question. What will these new frequencies do when they get here? Are you ready for the change? In our last hour, I asked the question, how has the whole 2012 movement caused you to change your plans for the next 2 years and 11 months? Do you have any space reserved in your plans for a contingency? Do you have a special plan that will be triggered into action if certain things happen? And if you do have a plan, are you procrastinating the exercise of this plan at all? I mean, we're only 3 years away from the peak of the activity, and we're sort of entering the leading edge of it now. Is there some criteria under which you will sell everything and move to the mountains? Do you realize that everyone else might do the same thing? Does it make a difference if you are in Iowa or in love? What about if you have not prepared to receive love like this? And if you have made yourself a window of sensibility like after I graduate, or after I get a job, or after I move to the next state? Has this choice been affected by whether or not love is in the picture for you. Do you think that the wealthy can always control their life conditions? You know, sometimes we think that. We think that, well, you know, I'm kind of poor, I'm low income, or I'm medium income, and I can't do the things like the rich. And people in Africa, where the mortality rate is so high from unclean water, or AIDS, or parasites, they cannot eat well, they can't get the right vitamins. You know, maybe they call it the disease of their culture. But Michael Jackson dies, and the founder of Herbalife dies, and they had plenty of money. And we have to continue our lives as usual, don't we? On the one side, they want to make the best choice, and they want to do the best thing with lots of options. On the other side, there is no more ability to avoid the cataclysm anymore than the bird has of landing on the ground. He has to land on the ground. They can fly, but they must come down sometime. If a person realizes they are going to die collectively, like in a large group, how do they contemplate their own death? How do they consider or sense their doom if it lies quietly on the calendar? Would they have a preference, like a last dance, a party, make up with their enemies? If they have creative and loving strength about this last thing, perhaps the end game could be changed. Perhaps they could make a choice. I can tell you that the consciousness of the collective groups are so very powerful. If they manifest this joy in the weeks before it, the whole transactions that will take place have the energy potential to change the course of the inevitable. Do you realize the power in that? Would it be as though the event was never to happen in the first place? Like rewriting the future as though it was the past? That's a great exercise, you know. You've got an impending situation coming up. You're getting ready to go to court. You're facing the parole board. You're having to go talk to your bank about being a month behind or 2 months behind on your payments. You fear your house being foreclosed upon. You fear going in to talk to your boss because he said, we need to talk. I find if you put yourself out in the future of that event and then look back at it, you will see probably the reality of what's going to happen. Don't think about it beforehand, because I can tell you, it never, ever turns out the way you think. But if you'll put yourself out past it, in the future of that event, and look back at it as though it's in the past, you'll see it quite clearly. And you'll realize it ain't that bad. And you'll also realize you can go back in the past and you can change how you will react to it when you go in there. When you go in and you talk to your boss and he says, Fred, listen, we're going to have to do a little cutting back and your position is no longer needed. Now, we'll give you 2 weeks severance pay. You've been a great guy for the last 5 years. Wonderful job. We've loved having you around here. We're going to go ahead and let you go now so that you're going to have the time on your hands to look for a job. And we're going to give you 2 weeks pay to help you along the way. You're highly qualified. You shouldn't have any trouble getting a job. If you need a recommendation, don't hesitate to call. That can be devastating. Because now you have to go home and tell Mama, I lost my job today. We might have to sell the house. We might have to move. We might lose everything. You see how devastating that could be if you go into it that way? But what about if you put yourself out in the future of that? Fred, call 161. Fred, call 161. Well, you know 161 is human resources. And you know, human resources never pages you. So take a few moments and put yourself out in the future of that event. Okay, I'm going to go into human resources, and they're going to say, Fred, we need to cut back. Your position's no longer needed. How am I going to react to that? Okay, no surprises. You already know. So why don't you go back in the past and live it a few times? Well, I can stand up and say I'm furious. I've worked here 5 years. I've given the best years of my life to this company, blah, 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 blah. Or you can say, that's okay. I understand when cutbacks have to be made. This is a great company, and I really appreciate being able to work here for the last 5 years and help you guys become billionaires. But that's okay. It's no problem. This happened exactly at the time it's supposed to happen, and we'll be fine. Do you realize how you're going to throw off that human resource person? Because they're expecting you to go off. They're expecting you to give all the excuses and talk back that they read about in their textbooks and their training seminars. But not you, Fred, because you've already been out to the future. And you already know there's another better job waiting right around the corner. And you're going to make more money, and you're going to have a better title, and you're going to be happier. And you're not going to be burned out the way you have been the last 18 months. You're not going to feel like you vomit when you pull into the parking lot each day before you go to work. And you're going to love what you do. Now, that's a great future. Thank that person that they're letting you go, because they forced you to stop procrastinating, take your own future in your own hands, and quit relinquishing your sovereignty to another, especially that pesky human resource lady. Now, some would say, when we talk about competition, we build whole economies on the basis of competition. Sports, finance, land ownership, and even academics are arenas in which we compete. In each of these, there is a clear winner, and often there are clear losers. Some would say that we may compete against ourselves to make ourselves better. In this, there might not be a loser, unless you want to talk about the guy who has enough to eat for the winter and the guy who does not, because he didn't get off his butt and plant that garden. Well, sure. I mean, he dug a pit. Let him fall in it. People that look at results often look for a shortcut. I'm still waiting for the organic chemistry pill to get the whole subject in one shot, you know. I don't want to take organic chemistry for 2 semesters. Neither should you. Why not just take the organic chemistry pill? Then you'll know all of the rules and all of the exceptions and all the reactions and all the weird guys' names that you have to remember. Fisher and Krebs and all those. Come on. Hard to remember all that stuff. Just take the organic chemistry learning pill. Or listen to the tapes while you sleep and let it go into your brain so you don't have to sit through class. There are shortcuts. There is lots of proof that there has been one type of intervention or another. It looks like in each of these cases, there was an evolutionary shift that was immediately precipitated by these interventions. This competition drive to shortcut the process may have accelerated this race beyond the race's wisdom to handle the responsibility to use that knowledge for the betterment of all. Now, for those of you that are sitting out there saying, no, it was all evolution. We crawled forth from the primordial ooze, and we became apes, and then standing apes, and then we became sapiens, and then Homo sapiens, and then Homo sapiens sapiens. I say your head is in the sand. You have to realize that we have picked apart the genome down to the last atom. And there is clear evidence somebody was in there messing around might have been God, might have been Anunnaki, it might have been other off-worlders, but there's been gene splicing going on in there, folks. There's been cloning going on with animals. If you don't believe me, listen to Lloyd Pye. If you haven't heard him in a while, give us a call. We'll have him back on the program and let him tell you about intervention theory. Intervention is the shortcut. Intervention is the evolutionary shortcut that we're talking about. Instead, that competitive gene kicked in again, and the human race built walls. We built barriers and even denied access to capital for those others so we could remain in power. Every bird flies into the sights of your gun, but not your neighbor's too. Where is the uniqueness in the man if he only consumes the world left behind by the man before him? How do you declare your sovereignty and that you have suffered enough from the wars and contentions of winners and losers? Could it be enough to play the game of baseball? Or does there have to be a loser in the game? I'm just asking here. You tell me. 415-762-1161. Is it enough to just play the game? Or do we have to have a loser? You tell me. Do you have to gain the whole world only to lose your own soul? Is this where our world is going? Nation against nation, tribe against tribe. We squeeze out the nice beaches and send the losers to the flea-infested sands of Zimbabwe. Is there a message here? Is there a bigger theme inside the 2012 movement that we need to discuss? Or is this all about the haves building their arks and their bomb shelters and their food storage, only to wait for the cosmos to clear away the stubble so they can come out and enjoy the new earth? Is this where your feelings are? Or do you have plans for the earth now? I think you do. And I'd like to hear your plans. So tonight on X Squared Radio, third hour, January 10th, the planning table is open. What have you manifested for the year 2012? Are you ready for this new frequency that we're about to travel through that's 60 light years wide? I don't think we're going to miss it, people. I think we're going to go smack dab through the middle of it. Those high frequency cosmic rays are going to come pounding through our atmosphere, down into the peas and carrots we consume, and it's going to mix and entangle with our bodies. Keep in mind, these particles were created some 10 billion years ago by supernovas. That means they're fresh. That means they're unfettered, uncycled, and they're being compressed into a cosmic pellet through which our heliosphere is about to travel. And our solar wind is so wimpy right now, down around 300 kilometers per second, it's going to pass through us unfettered. Our solar wind isn't even going to carve a ripple in it. Those particles will strike Earth. And those cosmic rays will generate photons. And those photons will fluoresce with our DNA. Is this the cosmic switch that turns on the junk DNA in us? Our latent events about to be energized so that we can again fly, so we can again communicate with our minds? Or do you think we're stuck at the grindstone? Do you think we have to compete with each other and squeeze out the planet so that we get the best parts and they don't? think about who the we and who the they is, too, while you're at it. The new year is upon us, and the nation is frozen and quiet, and there will be economic effects from this. Gasoline went up 15 cents across the board this week in the United States. Heating oil is being shipped a month early as the East braces for a longer and colder winter than expected. As though we are holding one long collective breath, the nation waits for something to break free. Small business, the largest employer in the nation, is waiting like a frightened kitten on the way to the pound as Obama decides whether he will allow us to compete with the federal government. The wealthy shake their heads as they pass by the entrepreneur like beggars at the promenade. The seeds of last year's crop lie beneath the frozen ground, dormant, and waiting for the spring sun in hopes the snow will melt life into them rather than sublimate into the crackling dry winds that threaten their existence. And the water flows downstream to the ocean, sterile and barren, while the salmon play in the sea. Will the unseen signal sound in time for them to swim upstream, so we will have fish again? 2012 is 3 years away. The earth will soon begin climbing the leading edge of the bell curve of energetic events predicted by the ancients. The message we left ourselves is going unheeded as the entertainment industry takes license with the idea, putting their best actors and their beautiful ones out there to boost the sales of popcorn and nacho cheese. Was this the message we left for ourselves? Was this why we chiseled granite and stacked stone and plated gold and etched our sacred texts? Was this why we quarried the pyramids? Was this why we measured the stars? Or is there a bigger message for us? Is there something out there that you are changing and molding for the earth right now? If there is, I want to hear about it. Please call 415-762-1161. One of my great listeners says, I sent this when you were talking about college students getting discouraged about wasted education because of 2012. The more people learning the skills to continue past 2012, then we won't have to go back to the Stone Age. Well, I agree with that somewhat, except in college you only learn a part of the story. The people that really know how to make steel, the people that really know how to make circuits and how to design things and program things, they're the engineers that are out there working it. The academics don't know how to teach that. You don't learn that till you get into the job field. What I want to make sure is that the great ones, the ones that are handling the finance, the ones that are at the headwaters of the engineering workforce out there, I want to make sure they survive. Because the people that know how to do stuff are the ones that are going to keep us out of that Stone Age. Given that about 80 to 90% of all modern populations live within 20 miles of a coast, I would say a rogue tsunami 400 or 500 meters high would be rather devastating. Take, for example, a consideration that Washington, D.C., also known as Foggy Bottom, would be 50 feet underwater if it wasn't for a very elaborate system of dikes and pumps. Something catastrophic or cataclysmic that occurs to upset that balance would put our nation's capital a decent way underwater. If the leadership of our government happened to be out of town at the time, not really a problem. If they happen to be in session at the time and Washington goes underwater, it could be a significant problem, nigh unto anarchy. Now, I know some of you are out there advocating anarchy. You are anarchists. I don't think you understand what you're asking for. We don't want riots in the streets. We don't want unorganized mayhem. We don't want the have-nots to rise up and shatter the barriers and the gates and the walls of the haves and take what they have by force. This is exactly the kind of thing that happened in China right after World War II. The looting, the devastation of that area as the aristocrats were plummeted into poverty and their houses were used as goat stables. The same thing is happening in Baghdad. Hundreds of museums, thousands of artifacts, some of which have not been seen by the West, that might tell a story of origination, that might tell a story of reincarnation and legacies beyond lifetimes, have been looted. Rumor has it that the West, not just the United States, went into these museums and crated up as much as they could haul away, not just for private collectors, but also for governmental efforts at keeping those things secret. This is a travesty. This is why we built the pyramids. This is why we built the temples in South America and the roads. It's why we created the calendar, so it would survive all cataclysm and be placed back in our hands in this day and time. Yes, it was an ancient people that built these things, but the ancient people was us. We're the ones that built it. We're the ones that made it for ourselves. And now we're beginning to go into this 2012 movement, this 2012 phenomenon, this 2012 alignment, a rendezvous with a spot in space we haven't seen for 26,000 years. It's quite a bit different than the annual alignments. It's quite a bit different than the centennial alignments every 100 years. This is a processional alignment we will not see again for 26,000 years. It's different this time. I want you to open your eyes to it. I want to open your minds to the possibilities. Sure, we might be talking about pole shifts. We might be talking about conflagration like we saw in the movie Knowing. We might be talking about earthquakes and volcanoes. Certainly the evidence is there. We had a 6.5 in Northern California just yesterday. Devastating. Sure, we're going to have volcanic eruptions. The Philippines are still wrestling with the idea of at least one island having a significant number of its mailing addresses rearranged by this volcano. But that being said, there are 7 billion consciousnesses on the Earth right now, and the Earth is highly entangled with them. Our intention, our dreams, our fears are tied up with this Earth. And scientists are openly admitting that photons are popping in and out of our dimension from another dimension. They're openly admitting that consciousness is integrally tied in with the creation of matter. It's a matter of fact now. It's a matter of fact. It's no longer theory. It's no longer woo-woo. It's not old stream. It's mainstream. Our consciousness is tied up with creation. This means that we as a people, we as a race, we as conscious beings can change the events of 2012. We can change how hard it is on us. We can even make it a great thing. We can help it streamline us, and we can have it help us manifest a greater, higher organization. Unfortunately, on this planet, we also realize that we don't organize very well as people. We separate ourselves up into tribes. We like to fabricate and proliferate fear. A few weeks ago, we talked about the difference between the budget of the space program in the United States and the budget for the defense program in the United States. And you're not going to believe the disparity. $17 billion for the space program and $1.03 trillion for defense. Last time I looked, guys, we were getting fired on by homemade bombs and 70-year-old bolt-action rifles. Why are we preparing an army to battle a uniformed force? Come on. The military uniform is a relic. Mech units are history, just like the siege engines of the French and the Romans. We don't use them anymore because they're not effective to fight this kind of war anymore. And this time we might be lining up against forces that are not from this world. And we might even need to consider that there are no forces there to line up against at all. Maybe it's just us. Maybe they won't fight us if they do come. They'll come to help. So why in the world do we need $1.03 trillion for a nuclear budget? I find it kind of silly, since there's no major powers in the world anymore except China and us. And we're not getting ready to go to war. We can't go to war with our own bank. Anyway, I know you have thoughts on it. We have about 15 minutes left. 415-762-1161. 2012. How has it made you change your plans? What are you going to do different now than you were last year? This whole 2012 movement is almost like historical terrorism. It is such a daunting and amazing subject. If students are asking, hey, why am I in school? Why don't I just go out and enjoy life if everything's going to end in 2012 anyway? If they're asking that question, and by the way, it's not just a few students, it's a lot of students asking that question, then what kind of changes can we make? How can we rearrange the matter and our interaction with matter in this universe so that we can survive it? Do we need to organize off-world ships? Do we need to make underground bunkers? What is it that we need to do? That's right. The answer is, we don't really know. We do not really know what we're supposed to do. Instead, we sit here and we compete with one another. We not only compete on a team level, we compete on a family level. We compete on a community level. We compete on a state level, for crying out loud. We compete for federal dollars. And we certainly compete on a national level, as you can see in the news each time you look at it. Dale from New York, you're on the program. Welcome.
Oh, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to have you back.
I'd like to tell you about a dream I had last week. I don't know if it has any bearing on what we're discussing, but I would like your viewpoint on it.
And we would like to hear your dream.
Okay, first, I happen to work for the United States Army, but that's just a job I happen to fall into. It's not nothing I had planned to do for a long time. It's just the way it is. But in my dream, I'm at my storage facility where I work, and by the way, the dream's in color and very vivid. And we have several of these folding tables set up and chairs set around like we're going to have some kind of instruction given to us. And I'm there, and some of my coworkers and one of my friends is there, and the instruction team is running around. These guys are, I've seen them before working for the military. They're contractors that are all hyped up about teaching us the latest and greatest about whatever equipment we're going to get in. and these guys have containers, and they're full of these radios. And they're pulling them out, and their team's getting all set up, and they're all motivated to give us great instruction. And I happen to look at these radios, and I realize they're radios that are 20 years old, that there's five or six generations of more advanced radio systems the Army uses. So in my dream, I asked the chief instructor, I go, well, why are you trying to teach us about these radio systems that are 25 years old? They're obsolete. They're useless. And he and his team just stop moving, and they all look at me, and they look at me in shock, and then it changes to disbelief, and then their expression changes to despondency. And my friend that's sitting next to me just starts laughing. And at that point, the dream's over. So what do you think of that one, Brooks?
Well, you were either in the past having this dream, and they were pretty amazed that you were saying, what are you talking about, guys? These radios are 25 years old. I mean, they're smaller and lighter and more powerful and digital now. Why are you using those? And they're looking at you going, what? What are you talking about? Or maybe there's been such budget cutbacks that the newer radios, the batteries don't work on them the way they think, or some kind of EMP pulse happened, and they're using the older radios because they're still around and they're a longer wavelength, and so they survived whatever event happened that knocked the shorter wavelength radios out.
Yeah, it's pretty, I had the feeling that it was a symbolic, in my opinion, it was a symbolic interpretation about the way that our military and our government systems operate, that it's all obsolete, that we somehow will evolve past this, where we won't need those kinds of things any longer, and I won't need to do the kind of job I do now anymore. That's my feeling about it.
Well, I like that, you know, that I would like armies to become obsolete. Honestly, I think if we took our defense budget of $1.03 trillion and our space budget of $17 billion and swapped them, I think it'd throw everybody off.
So do I, and, you know, I just had this feeling for a long time that those systems that we are operating under now, the political systems and the social systems, they have to change or we won't survive. And I think the 2012 thing is an indication that we might make an evolutionary jump because of all the, well, for instance, you said the junk DNA being altered and changed. Maybe that's what's going to happen.
Well, I have a tendency to agree with you. I think that if nothing else, you know, it makes a good punctuation event. We can say, as a people, because, come on, we're 273 million strong in this country, and there's only 435 of them. We could say, you know what, we've tried it your way since 1776. We've let you amend the Constitution. We've let you interpret timeless laws of human rights and rights of governments. And you know what? We're going to try it our way for a while. Maybe it's a good time for us to say, not anymore. No more wars. No more confiscatory taxes. We don't need 375,000 federal workers in Washington, D.C. any longer. We don't need an IRS. We don't need the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Let's just call all the troops home. Let's turn all the money into the space program and let those who we perceive as our enemies try to figure out what we're doing.
Well, it sounds like a better plan than what they're putting out in Washington.
Well, we still have those 25-year-old radios, and they probably work okay, and we have 10-year-old radios and 5-year-old radios, so why do we need new radios?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. But I can tell you, I see millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment every day come and go. And one of the mindsets that some of these organizations have is that there's some unbreakable supply chain, some endless supply warehouse where all these things are. I got to tell you, this stuff is finite, you know. There's only so much of it we have, and if it's gone, if it's destroyed or lost, it's gone forever. Because we don't have the industrial capability any longer to replace it.
Well, that's very true. And I guess the bigger question would be, you know, this kind of money that creates these kinds of defense contracts where people that make uniforms and bullets and casings and boots and buckles and all kinds of switches and knobs and everything for the military. Why, if we cut back on the federal budget for the military, I forget what it is now. I honestly don't know what it is. It may be $30 billion a day, for all I know. All these people are going to be out of work. And to that, I say, yeah, well, how about if we take the same factories and stop making swords and start making plowshares, so to speak?
I agree. I wouldn't mind if I was losing my job because there was no more need to maintain these huge military forces. I wouldn't be so upset about that. You know, I would believe that if that's the case, then we probably are putting our money into more peaceful projects, and I could probably find employment somewhere there.
Well, that's true, and I think the main thing to do is to put the people down at Wars R Us out of business. We just need to stop fabricating wars in manila envelopes and then dropping them on the president's desk every time we need to spend some money.
I agree. But anyway, as far as 2012 is concerned, I'm going to keep my eyes open. Watch what's going on, and keep my family close. But I'm not going to live in fear. I am tired of being afraid.
Very well said. I think that should be the clarion call of 2012. I'm tired of being afraid. Very good. I really, really appreciate it, Dave. Or Dale, I'm sorry.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'll let you go now so somebody else can call.
All right. So the thing to pay attention to here, and I like that, I'm not going to be afraid any longer. I don't want you to be duped by the onslaught of 2012 programs that are getting ready to come out. History Channel's got a special called Seekers 2012 getting ready to come out. Guarantee it's going to be animated CG scare the pants off you stuff. And the Horizon Project is great. It doesn't have a lot to do with 2012, but it does have a lot to do with pole shifts and things that could happen. Don't be afraid, and don't make your changes based on fear. Make them based on love and how you can love each other. And by the way, don't procrastinate love anymore. If you've got the chance, if you see her walk by, if you see him walk by, don't hesitate. Don't procrastinate. You better get to know each other now. Time's a-wasting, people. And we have the ability to change everything. We have the consciousness. We have the right. We have the sovereignty. Just lay the fear down and step away from the table. Quit feeding in the frenzy and realize that you are the creator. You manifest your own world. And I wouldn't spend another day of it without being with the one you love. We'll see you next week. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.